A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all listeners tuning in from around the world. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On the Reading News Analysis, your trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. It's Monday, the 27th of October, 2025, and we step into a brand new week. We continue doing what we do best, breaking down the big issues from governance to grassroots, from policy to the people. Now, On the Reading News Analysis is your weekday guide to what matters most, bringing you the headlines behind the headlines every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. Now, this isn't just another news show. On the Reading News Analysis is about depth and dialogue. It's where we interrogate the stories shaping our nation, ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots through archived audio, expert commentary, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to the everyday realities of Namibians, we bring you the full story with context, clarity, and credibility. Our interviews are long form and in-depth because some stories deserve more than just sound bites. We come prepared with research, background, and your questions to make sure every conversation brings us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath the surface. Remember, you can catch On the Radar live on all Eagle FM frequencies via the Eagle FM app or our interactive Eagle FM website. And don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, exclusive interview clips, and behind-the-scenes content. So stay tuned, stay curious, and stay beyond the surface. This is On the Radar. On the Reading News Analysis, where Namibia comes to think. Namibia joined the rest of the world in commemorating World Food Day under the global theme, Hand in Hand for Better Food and a Better Future. The event hosted in Kamangoro constituency of the Kavango West region brought together government officials, farmers, and development partners to promote awareness and action toward eliminating hunger, food security, and malnutrition. Delivering the keynote address on behalf of Inge Zamani, Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, is Alfred Sikopo, the Deputy Executive Director for Land Management Department. We emphasize the importance of collaboration and innovation in transforming Namibia's agri-food system. He noted that the day serves as a reminder of the shared responsibility to build a future where no Namibia is left behind in the fight against hunger and malnutrition. This theme highlights the urgent need for increased collaboration and collective action to transform the agri-food systems, ensuring a healthier, more sustainable, and well-nourished future for all. The minister acknowledged that Namibia remains highly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, including prolonged droughts, unpredictable rainfall, and rising temperatures, all of which threaten food production and rural livelihoods. He also, speaking on behalf of the minister, stressed the need for bold, innovative, and resilient approaches to agriculture supported by strong partnership at all levels. These challenges, and I quote, are for bold and innovative measures, stronger partnerships, and renewed commitment to building resilience within our agri-food systems. Zamani reaffirmed the government's commitment to Vision 2030 and Sustainable Development Goals, that is SDGs, highlighting key national programs aimed at boosting food security. Now, this include the Green Scheme Program, Value Chain Development Schemes, and the Dryland Crop Production Program, all designed to enhance productivity, create employment, and uplift rural livelihoods. He further commended local farmers for their continuous efforts toward building a sustainable food system and expressing gratitude to sponsors and development partners for their donations of food items, gardening tools, and agricultural inputs to vulnerable household and small-scale farmers. The minister also extended her appreciation to Verna Sinombo, who is the governor of Kavango West and Kavango West Regional Council, for hosting the 2025 World Food Day commemoration, as well as the Food and Agriculture Organization, FIO, and organizing committees for their vital role in making the event a success. Let's now take a listen to Alfred Sikopo speaking on behalf of the minister himself.
Honor for me to stand before you today as we commemorate the World Food Day here in Kavango, Australia, of the Kavango West region. The objectives of commemorating this day is to promote worldwide awareness and education for the elimination of hunger, food insecurity, malnutrition, and encourage action for a better future. This year, we are commemorating the World Food Day under the theme, Hand in, Hand for Better Food and Better Future. This theme highlights the urgent need for increased cooperation and collective action to transform the agri-food systems, ensuring a healthier, more sustainable, and well-nourished future for all. The theme also resonates deeply with the challenges and aspirations of our country, particularly here in Kahama West, a region which is blessed with immense potential to drive food security and agricultural growth. Today, we are gathered to celebrate the progress we have achieved and to reaffirm our shared responsibility and commitment to shaping our future where no Namibian is left behind in the fight against hunger and malnutrition. Our country is highly vulnerable to the effects of climate change. We are naturally prone to recurring droughts that strain our people, our economy, and the environment. Prolonged dry spells, unpredictable rainfall patterns, and the rising temperatures have placed immense pressure on our natural resources, which threatens our agricultural production and the livelihoods of thousands of farming households who depend on resources for survival. These climate shocks have far-reaching consequences, such as a reduction in crop yields, diminishing grazing pasture for our grazing areas, and worsening the vulnerability of already food insecure communities. As a country, where agriculture remains a backbone of rural economies, these challenges call for bold and innovative measures, stronger partnership, and renewed commitment to building resilience within our agricultural agri-food systems in the country. As we celebrate the World Food Day, this year under the theme Hand in Hand for Better Food and Better Future, let us renew our collective commitments to ensuring that every Namibian enjoys access to food and the fundamental right to a healthy, well-nourished, and dignified life. This commitment goes beyond addressing the hunger for today. It is about laying the foundation for a future where our agri-food systems are sustainable, inclusive, and resilient to the challenges of climate change and economic uncertainty. It is about creating opportunities for our farmers, empowering our youth in agriculture, and fostering innovation that will drive productivity and safeguarding our natural resources in the country. Most importantly, it is about building a Namibia where no citizen is left behind, where food security is not a privilege for few, but a guarantee for all Namibians. Director of Ceremonies, ladies and gentlemen, let us join hands in producing sufficient, safe and nutritious food in order to feed our nation and to contribute meaningfully towards the realization of Namibia's Vision 2030 and its Sustainable Development Goals. Vision 2030 calls upon to build a nation that is food secure, prosperous, and resilient, where agriculture serves as a driver of
the... Let's pause here now to make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Umthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Also speaking at the event is Fernande Mapopi from the FAO, that is the Food and Agriculture Organization. Let's now take a listen to him.
It's a privilege to join you here in Namagoro constituency of Kavango West on the occasion of World Food Day. And this year is particularly special as we mark not only the World Food Day, but also the 80th anniversary of FAO's birthday. On behalf of FAO in Namibia, I extend warm thanks to the government of the Republic of Namibia, to the regional and local authorities here in Kavango West, and to all the farmers, fishers, value chain actors, private sectors, women and youth, who family farmers and smallholder farmers who join us in this important celebration. We gather today because despite tremendous progress made globally in Africa, and in Africa, hunger, malnutrition, and inequity to access to food remain persistent challenges. As FAO Director General Dr. Q Dongyu reminded us, the world produces enough food for everyone, yet food availability, accessibility, and affordability are not equal for all. This holds true in Namibia and in this region of Kavango West. Many of you know the firsthand how climate shocks, pests, erratic rainfall, and limited infrastructure can undermine livelihood and food security. But we also gather to celebrate hope, resilience, innovation, and community. FAO's founding aspiration remains alive to ensure that no one goes to bed hungry and that all people can lead lives with dignity. FAO puts forward a vision built around four betters: better production, better nutrition, better environment, and better life for all, leaving no one behind. Allow me to reflect briefly on each in the context of Namibia. Better production. To make sure our farmers, pastoralists, fishers, value chain actors are equipped to produce more with less. Locally, that means supporting improved seed varieties, efficient water use, especially in our semi-arid country, access to extension services, and post-harvest handling so that what is grown actually reaches market and consumer. This is very important, and some of the realities that we are facing. After visiting some farmers, we observe that there's a lot that goes to waste because of limited infrastructure in terms of storage. And it requires that we all work collaboratively to create markets and also develop required infrastructure to reduce post-harvest loss. Better nutrition, it's not enough to produce food. It must be safe, nutritious, affordable, and accessible to all families. In Namibia, we must continue to foster diversified diets, promote local fruits and vegetables, and ensure that vulnerable groups, children, women, and elderly, have full access to nutritious food and safe food. Better environment. Our land, water, and ecosystems underpin everything. Sustainably manage them, protect soils, manage water, conserve biodiversity, so that future generations inherit a viable environment in which to produce and live. Better life. Ultimately, our aim is a life of dignity, opportunity, and stability for all people. As the Director General of FAO put it, food does not only feed the body, but it also feeds the soul. It restores dignity and it ensures a better life and a better future for all. In the spirit of these betters, I would like to highlight some key aspects in line with FAO Namibia Country Programming Framework, the United Nations Sustainable Development cooperation framework and the 6th National Development Plan, which was just launched by the President in July of this year, where FAO and partners are ready to work with every citizen. Number one, empowering smallholder and communal area farmers. Smallholders, especially those in communal lands, are major food producers in Namibia, yet often marginalized. FAO draws attention to this. Smallholders produce most of the food we eat, yet they are often left to sit on the margins of the society. Here in Namibia, we must strengthen support for communal farmers, improve access to land rights, especially for women and youth, credit and finance, appropriate technology, training in good agronomic practices, improving post-harvest loss and connecting to markets, both domestic and regional, especially taking advantage of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Number two, attracting youth to agriculture and food systems. Our young people must see agriculture and food system as opportunity and not a backup. We must make agriculture attractive to youth, facilitate their access to land, finance, and digital tools. In Namibia, let us promote youth agripreneurship, agro-processing initiatives, digital tools for market information and weather services, and strengthen vocational trainings so that young people thrive in agribusinesses. Number three, resilience to climate change, pests, and shocks. We live in a world of increasing unpredictability. The FAO Director General warned, climate shocks, pests, and disease, economic downturns, and the devastating effect of protracted conflict destroys years of advancement. For Namibia, this means, among others, investment in drought-resistant crops, early warning systems for pests such as locusts, improved storage to reduce post-harvest loss, and inclusive insurance or risk mitigation mechanisms. So today, as we mark World Food Day and honor FAO's 8 years of work, let us renew our commitment. Let the community of Namagoro, together with the rest of Namibia, join hands with government, private sector, civil society, traditional authorities, and build a food secure future for all. Let local governments commit to inclusive policies, including women and youth, recognizing that empowerment is central to lasting progress. Let the farmers and agripreneurs of Namibia embrace innovation, collaboration, and sustainability. Produce with care for the land, diversify crops, strengthen value chains. And let us ensure that no one is left behind, from the small family farmer to remote villages, to the urban consumer. Every person has the right to safe and nutritious food. On this World Food Day, let us reaffirm our commitment to our shared mission until it is accomplished. Let the end of hunger be our common and human legacy. In conclusion, I would like to thank all of you for your presence here today and for the role you play in food and agriculture in Namibia. To the women farmers, the youth innovators, the traditional leaders, the ministry officials, the local supporting staff, everyone present here, your work is noble and we are grateful and appreciate the work that you are doing. Let us pledge together that by 2030, in line with the Sustainable Development Goal to end hunger, Namibia will be any example of vibrant, resilient, inclusive and sustainable agri-food system. Let this gathering mark not only a celebration, but a strong step towards a future where everyone in Namibia is indeed and in Africa can eat well, live with dignity, and leave a promising land for the generations
Listen
to come.
To Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM.
And with that, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. So this is On The Reader News Analysis. We have yet more coming your way.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katutura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katutura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association will host its elective annual general meeting on Wednesday, the 5th of November, 2025 at 17:30. The meeting will be held virtually, allowing alumni to join from all corners of the world. All UNAM alumni are invited to be part of this important occasion as we reflect on the achievements, discuss key motions, and elect a new executive committee. AGM link will be shared closer to the date and all reports will be available on the UNAM website. Don't miss this opportunity to connect and shape the alumni legacy.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
A new publication by the Institute for Public Policy Research, also known as IPPR, has revealed that while Namibia possesses a growing pool of technical and engineering skills relevant to the green hydrogen industry, significant gaps remain in specialized training, certification, and local workforce readiness. The report released today explores the country's existing capacity and preparedness to support the fast-emerging green hydrogen sector, which has been positioned as a cornerstone of Namibia's energy transition and economic growth. Speaking to Eagle FM, is Frederico Links. My colleague David Shombe facilitates the conversation.
Yes, we are continuing with on the radar news bulletin, and today we are going to speak about green hydrogen bulletin. That is issue number 4 that was published by Institute of Public Policy and Research. And speaking about the skills in green hydrogen sectors, what is the gap, and also the general overview, particularly looking at the development and moving forward. I got into the conversation with one of the researchers and the publisher of bulletin. That is Mr. Frederico Links. Mr. Frederico, good afternoon, and how are you doing?
Good afternoon, and I'm good, and thanks for having me on.
Yes, thank you. Now, let us look at the publication, especially when it's coming to the skills of the green hydrogen sector. What is your general overview, and what are the key findings of this publication?
Well, I mean, to cut to the short of it, we are not well placed in terms of skills in Namibia to be able to optimally benefit from, the emergent green hydrogen economy. Mm-hmm. We need to be producing higher level skills and expertise and drawing them into the green hydrogen sector, which is a highly specialized sector with a very specialized set of skills will be necessary. Mm. Whether it's even if we're talking about someone like a welder, for instance, mm-hmm. Somebody specifically trained to work in the green hydrogen sector as a welder, for instance, would be trained in certain safety related welding techniques. So the skills necessary, the point I'm trying to make is that, even for things like welders, the types of skills aren't, the skills necessary for an ordinary welder. Now, when we start talking about, skill sets such as, and at levels such as scientists,
yeah,
and engineers,
yeah,
and sort of these higher level skill sets,
yeah,
we certainly aren't in a position to produce at the quality and the quantities necessary,
mm-hmm,
to be able to have Namibians participate optimally in the green hydrogen sector.
Looking at the study, what do you think were some of the gaps, particularly in the skills which were given to those who, you know, partake in either the study on green hydrogen, either those who were sent abroad? What do you think is the gap in those studies?
Look, so there are a number of studies going on at the moment. You know, Hyphen is doing this skill census.
Yeah.
Namibia Green Hydrogen Program has also done a skill study this year in, yeah, 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we are waiting to see what emerges from these big studies. Hopefully these big studies, so that, you know, important data can be mined to get an idea and a sense of what needs to happen. But I think, I mean, it's been clear a long time. There have been a lot of studies over the years of the quality of education, and not just at basic education level, but through tertiary education. And Namibia doesn't perform well when it comes to STEM, which is science, technology, education and mathematics, teaching and learning. We don't fare very well. And those are the areas where we need graduates, and not just in terms of, you know, sort of in your graduate degrees, but also in terms of your TVET level skills, where you need artisans and technicians with mathematical capabilities and capacities that are above, you know, your average. Yeah. So we are falling short, and we know this. We've known this for years. We've been talking about, you know, educational transformation, about the quality of education for decades now.
Yeah, while we're at the quality of education, there's also an aspect in the Namibian context where we were trying to solve the aspect of sending people to school, but after university, quite very difficult to be in the job market, quite difficult to be absorbed. Now, you conducted the study, especially regarding the skills in the area of green hydrogen sector. Maybe I want your findings, especially to those students who were sent abroad, in your interaction with some of them. What were some of these, outcomes? Were these people directly connected to what they have studied for? Are they under training? Are they somewhere? What is your findings on that?
So, I mean, what we've heard from some of these graduates who've gone, for instance, the scholarship route,
mm-hmm,
and you have these scholarship initiatives are specifically focused on sort of the green hydrogen sector.
Mm.
And what we've heard back from some of these students, and we had them in some of our meetings in the past, was that, you know, they went for these studies and wherever, you know, Germany or so, Europe and so on. And they come back, but, so now they have this specialized qualification and expertise and skill set,
yeah,
but actually there's no opportunity here. The opportunity that they studied for doesn't in the first place exist,
mm-hmm,
or there are positions, but they're already filled. So there aren't any more positions than what are already there. And that's a function of, you know, the nature and the pace of the development of the green hydrogen sector, where, you know, projects are gradually scaling up and then needing certain skill sets and certain expertise and so on. And unfortunately, some of these graduates, they find themselves that they have this qualification, they have the accreditation, they have the skills, but there's no opportunity. And so this is where a lot of them find themselves, and this is what they've said to us. Yeah.
Now, what are some of the key recommendations moving forward? Because there is always this is on the table to say NDP6, 500,000 jobs and opening up the industries. But when you look, for example, at the previous public-private sector forum, they had discussion to say institutions must work together or we must find ways. But based on your studies, what is your recommendation, particularly looking at the realization of the jobs and also, expanding of the industry to the extent that it has been put on the table, because what is being said and what is out is a bit not what is what it is. But what is your recommendation, that particularly from the study?
Look, I mean, the bottom line is there needs to be sort of root and branch reform of our educational sector. That needs to happen. Because if we don't produce the skills, there are limits to where Namibians can go in the green hydrogen economy. How far and how high and so on, and the opportunities they can access. And if investors come here and they see that the skill sets or don't exist or don't exist in large enough numbers that they require, they're going to limit the investment, which means less jobs, less opportunities. So it has an impact on investment. It has an impact on investor projections and so on. It has an impact on what sort of businesses, for instance, if opportunities are and projects and are limited on the green hydrogen landscape, there's only a limited amount of businesses that can be established to cater to those those projects. So even then, your graduates, your business people are limited to what sort of business they can do on this. And it all comes back to, the education system. Because if you're producing large quantities of high quality school leavers that then go into a tertiary level education that is of a high quality, a high level, and produces high level skills. The output out of that tertiary system will be, will spur economic activity, and not just in green hydrogen, but across various related sectors.
Yes, Mr. Frederico Links, thank you very much for your time and thank you for your input.
We
thank
are looking at
the recent.
And for now, let's take a listen to a conversation that my colleague David Shamba had with Jonah Musheko that is at today's release of the, by the IPPR, the release of another document on skill set.
Yes, we are looking at the recent launch report about green hydrogen. It's concerning the skills in the sector of green hydrogen. It's known as the Monitor Issue 4 by Institute of Public Policy and Research. And, I got into the conversation with the spokesperson of Green Hydrogen Program, Jonah Musheko, just to give an overview and also to see in terms of skills, especially when it's coming to green hydrogen, where are we and also what are some of the, his view, especially regarding the recent launched report. Musheko, good afternoon and how are you doing?
Well, thank you for having me, and good afternoon to you and the listeners. I think the first thing, like you put it, the report, it's a good report. Obviously, these are things, initiatives we encourage, in as much as publications and critics are concerned. It's obviously we are expecting it to be uploaded on the website. I think they said today or tomorrow. Then we can have a full picture of what it covers. But I think we got a snippet of that in terms of what are some of the key concerns in terms of skills development in the country, in terms of being prepared for the sector, which really gives us hope that the fact that there's an engagement, there's interest, it's a good thing. Obviously, there are areas where we can shed more light. They perhaps still need to get more understanding on what we are doing. And we encourage inclusivity in terms of such publications. It's a good publication, and we are looking forward to seeing it fully. And we encourage people to read it and always reach out to us for clarity where it's needed. I also wouldn't want to preempt it. I would encourage all of us to engage it so that we'll be able to really give proper peer review, if we may call it that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is really to say that we must understand that green hydrogen is an upcoming kind of industry. And in looking at all the projects that we are initiating and we are pushing, they are coming online one by one. And we as a country need to be prepared in terms of how do we show up, how do we participate. That doesn't necessarily just need to be skills, but skills is one of those things to say, you look, when you have projects that are saying next year they will start with production or construction, how many people do you have you trained so far in terms of skills development? You can't train people the same year the project are taking off. You must train the people earlier. That's what we did. I think you have a question there before.
Yeah, there is one thing which was raised in the presentation, especially regarding the first cohort of the students who were sent abroad and trained. So some or many of them did not get an opportunity to work in the industry, and there's a bit of frustration about that. Maybe if you are able to give us maybe data to say how many students were trained, how many were sent abroad, and how many are working on the project, and is this a fact or just what do you think about it?
You see, like, you know, and I think it's good that we should have an understanding, like I was explaining to say, we have sent people to school and we continue to do so. Currently, we are busy with evaluating cohort intake for, you know, a third one.
Yeah.
The idea is to train, to help people that are skilled, multi-skilled, to be able to participate in the, as the projects come online. We cannot train people on the day of the construction. We must have people trained ready to participate. And that's what we are doing. We have sent about 193 students to be trained at different level, masters and TVET, TVET being one of the most important ones. And look, the understanding what we have also informed them is to say, this we are doing for you to be able to be prepared and be ready to participate as projects get online. Currently, we've got Taurus, we've got Clean Energy, we've got High Iron Oshivela. They have got taken up, some of them, and we have got more projects coming, and some of them are also getting online. We cannot then, and it's, this will happen as in next year.
Yeah.
If every, let's say two of these projects, if they get all the paperwork that they require, yeah, the money is already there. Then they will already start to move on to phase two. That's now Clean Energy as well as High Iron Oshivela. Mm-hmm. Same apply with Taurus. Now, that is next year. We are in towards the end of 2025. If next year come and we don't have people that are ready to participate in jobs, what will happen? We will have other people from other countries coming to build here. Basic things that we can do ourselves. And what will come back to us as a sector leader is to say, why are we having other nationals participating in doing building construction in a sector that Namibians can do? Then it will be very hard for us to justify, because it will seem as if we were not prepared. So for us is to send the people to school early for training, upskill and skill up, so that we are able to have them ready for projects.
Yeah, the IPPR indicated also the issue of coordination, where you're not allowing them to have data. So we come to this situation where we a bit not agreeing with each other, particularly it's coming to publication. How is the coordination between the program and other research and the research institution, either it's academia or think tanks?
No, this is a different matter in terms of when we issue out publications. It's independent, whether it's the researchers. I think it's always best that you get input from both sides, from those that you are writing on behalf, and also from the other parts of the coin.
Mm.
To hear we have opinions or sentiments of this nature concerning the sector, the green energy sector. You as the program, what is your say on this?
Mm-hmm.
Then you are able to get balanced research or reporting. And that's what we have agreed with IPPR. It's not the first time we are going to agree on doing this type of publication together. I think in their third additional issue, they have actually reached out to us, and we agree that we should continue with the same culture of coordinating publication, so that when this publication goes out there, it has got the critics and also has got the answers to the critics.
Mm.
That's always the best way to run, I think, when it comes to paperwork in terms of research.
Yes, Sonamo Shego, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back soon with more right here on the Radar News Analysis. Now, should you want to share opinions or ask questions or contributions right here, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota enjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore satimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Zambezi region is currently enjoying the National Sanitation Symposium organized by the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. Speaking at the event is Matengu Shimuzi, who is the chairperson of Zambezi Regional Council.
To each and every one of you who have traveled from near and far to participate in the now ground National Sanitation Symposium, we are honored to host this important gathering here in the mighty Zambezi region, a region blessed with abundant water resources, rich in biodiversity and vibrant communities. Yet, like many parts of our country and a continent, we also face pressing challenges in sanitation and water management. Therefore, it is fitting that we convene here to share knowledge, inspire innovation, and strengthen our collective resolve to advance sustainable sanitation for all. Dear participants, this symposium builds upon the strong momentum created by the 7th African Sanitation Conference, which was successfully hosted by Namibia in November 2023. I remember we participated in Lagos. That continental event reaffirmed our shared commitment to achieving SDG 6, clean water sanitation for all, and called upon nations to accelerate progress in inclusive and resilient sanitation system. Today, through this National Sanitation Symposium, we are taking that vision forward from dialogue to action and from planning to implementation. The theme, Bridging the Gap, Advancing Resilient, Inclusive, and Sustainable Sanitation Solutions, and by mitigating water resources pollution. Captures our mission perfectly. It reminds us that sanitation is not just about infrastructure. It is about dignity, health, equality, and sustainability. Access to proper sanitation is a fundamental human right. It safeguards our health by preventing the spread of disease. It protects our water resources from contamination. It empowers women and girls by ensuring privacy and safety. And it strengthens our community by promoting well-being, productivity. Simply put, sanitation is life. Honorable Deputy Minister, let me be very clear. In Zambezi region, we started this particular program 3 years back in Katima Rural, and then it was rolled the entire constituency in the region. And I'm quite confident a number of schools and other villages are already covered with sanitation. As leaders, professionals, and citizens, we must therefore embrace sanitation as a shared responsibility. Each household, each institution, each community must play its part. We must value our toilets as much as our hospital. Going into the because we're all to be taught have their toilets at their disposal from time to time. We must also promote innovative, climate resilient, and inclusive solution that leave no one behind, especially our rural population. Informal settlements and vulnerable groups. Honorable members, dear colleagues, I call upon all Namibians and visitors alike to take this opportunity to learn, share experience, and champion heavier change in our community. As indicated earlier, I don't think it's only Zambezi region who have done the proper work when it comes to sanitation. Other regions also, they quite sure. Together, let us make sanitation not only a priority, but a culture and a way of life. Honorable Deputy Minister, honorable members, I wish to thank the Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and the Land Reform.
And with that, we pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we're back, we're telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Stay tuned. This is On the Radar, a news analysis.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evito danjuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. nuneudo o tukwetira o special ngeza shake ngejipa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendi finawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not pick up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for economic indicators. $1 today is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 33 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 12 cents. €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 15 cents. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 72 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 77 cents. And one Baton Pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. The CBI distributive trade surfy rose slightly to minus 27 in October 2025 from minus 29 in September, indicating UK retailers continue to report declining sales with expectations for November worsening to minus 19. Now, despite the modest improvement, sales have now fallen for 13 consecutive months as consumer confidence remains weak. Now, the CBI said shoppers are growing more cautious ahead of Finance Minister Rachel Reeves' upcoming budget on November 27. Aluminium futures in the UK rose past $2,870 per tonne in October, the highest in over 3 years amid a backdrop of tight supply in the near-term and bullish longer-term demand. Now, top producer China retaliated its priority of preventing overcapacity in metal production. A strong competition between the country's smelters contributed to an ongoing producer deflationary spiral. This was in line with its aluminium output cap of 55 million tons annually, which was set to be breached later this year. Meanwhile, the State Bank of Pakistan held its benchmark policy rate at 11% in October, marking the fourth consecutive meeting to leave rates unchanged. Producer prices in Bosnia and Herzegovina rose by 1.5% year-on-year in September 2025, accelerating from a one-year low of 1.3% increase in the previous month. Now, the increase was mainly driven by higher cost of energy and non-durable consumer goods. Additionally, prices declined slightly at a slower pace for intermediate goods. Now, with that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back soon right after that to tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. See you soon.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka
as the city of
Goeie nuus, Inbad nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Inbad te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand. Spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Shalange, tashake ngeshefa, omarudi dayo loka, opone ushendi fenawa, nokumona oijamwiri nawa, ninge pata fanona, monika ko Eagle FM, onora etatimwe, bali hea di, nola natu, hea di bali no hea, ileko derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, omafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now it's time for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa, then move on to other parts regionally, move over to continental news, and thereafter we'll bring you new news from international sector. Of course, the city of Johannesburg in South Africa is preparing to host the G20 summit.
The city of Johannesburg prepares to host the G20 summit next month. Mayor Dada Morero embarked on a clean-up by-law enforcement campaign, removing all unregistered vendors from the pedestrian walkways. The move has, however, drawn mixed reactions, with some vendors taking the city to court and some advocacy groups supporting them, while pedestrians seem pleased. For more on this now, let's take you to SABC News reporter Lerato Makola, who's watching developments on this front for us. So, Lerato, take us through, what are you seeing, what are you hearing as these campaigns continue in earnest to ensure that the province is ready to host the G20 summit?
We're coming to you live from Bree Street, one of the busiest streets here in Bree, Queen Elizabeth Street. Well, what we saw earlier, we saw traffic controls and cleaners cleaning the city as part of the city of Johannesburg's mayor inner city clean up campaign. But we're here in the streets of Bree city in Johannesburg inner city to engage with some of the people who live here. I'm just going to engage with one of them just to tell us more about how they feel about this campaign. Thank you so much, Putwami. Ngicela wena ungitshele ukuthi uzizwa kanjani njengoba umeya embarke kule campaign ukuthi kuqinwe iJohannesburg inner city.
Hayi umeya, iwenza kahle. Thank you for choosing me. Umeya iwenza kahle, uyabona. Umeya is just doing a great job, you see, because we draw up kuphi eJoburg, uyabona. Yena sinabantwana la eJoza, kumele bebe nomoya fresh, uyabona. So cleaning, it's a good thing, because if now you are clean, you feel good. Yeah, so even the strata say you must become clean, that is so feel good. Yeah, so mayor is just did a right job, you see. Mina hamba no mayor.
The Johannesburg Stock Exchange pushed lower by weaker resources.
Week marked by mild downward pressure on the main JSE indices, with notable decline seen in resources stocks. Evergrowers, my name is rose and fell again on the last trading day of the week. Now let's take a look at where the overall market started right in the beginning of the week. Well, we know that right on Monday, we've seen that the overall markets continued to decline. So it has been a week of decline going down. So we have also seen that the overall index has continued to decline on Tuesday, with the OSHA index falling 2.1%. On Wednesday, we've seen the OSHA index down at 108,837,000, and it was flat. On Thursday, we saw the market.
And And now let's look at, take a look at violent crimes trends in South Africa.
Soweto to say they're living in fear following a wave of violent house robberies, and during the past 3 weeks, a group of men driving a Renault Clio has broken into homes, stolen laptops and cell phones. In the latest incident, a teenager was allegedly raped. We look at rampant incidents of violent house robberies within the country. And for this, we have roped in Mr. Christopher Thornhill, who's the CEO of private security company, the Pangela Group. Mr. Thornhill, sir, it's a pleasure. Welcome. So without diminishing our focus on incidents of violent crimes, especially house armed robberies, it's become quite a nationwide wave. In KwaZulu-Natal, in the Eastern Cape, have been particularly targeted within villages and even townships. What do you attribute these escalating criminal activities within the country to, sir?
Hi, thanks, Alicia. I contributed towards the economic state of the country. I think people are feeling more and more vulnerable. They're not getting the opportunity to find equal employment, perhaps, and they resort to crime and other sources of opportunity to create income for themselves. And I think that also got to do with the desperation of some of our citizens, that they are really in a state of desperation, that they turn to violent and non-violent crimes with regards to the robberies taking place. And we see that across the country. It's not necessarily only the KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape and even the Orlando area. I think everywhere in the country, the state of the economic impact on the residents and the rising costs is definitely a strong driver behind these.
That's a very important point there, of course, Christopher. I mean, look, if you've been a victim of armed robbery or home invasion, I really sympathize with those people because I know the trauma that actually lingers long after the actions. I also know that police stations in some of these townships or villages or areas are either ill-resourced, ill-equipped, too far, or simply cannot react, except by just giving you a case number. Christopher, has policing failed? If yes, how do we fix that?
I think it stems from something more than just police fail. It stems from the resources allocated to the people that has been the most vulnerable and the general public. The resources allocated might have actually failed, where they're actually understaffed, underfunded for regards to vehicles to be able to respond to these cases accurately and timeously. And also then I think it's changed from the employees we find in SAPS isn't the standard that they once were. Some of them might just be there for the benefits and not really to make a difference. And I think that's what we need more of. We need more police officers that want to make a difference in the communities and really help the most vulnerable, because no one is more vulnerable than someone that's just been impacted by a robbery or an incident of aggression towards them.
And that is actually what I was about to say there, Christopher, because housebreaking was actually at the top of this year's crime stats. Yet we were told, even with that report, that perceptions of safety had improved slightly. And I'm quoting the direct words there. But I can assure you, Christopher, these are not the current public sentiments. Are we being deceived somehow then in the actual systematic failures or inadequacies of police? We are hearing of gross corruption among some police at the Madlanga as well as ad hoc hearings. Reality is things are falling apart and there is no immediate plans or even measures in motion to effectively address the situation.
I think the Madlanga Commission comes at a very good time for the industry. I think it definitely makes us focus and talk about the difficult things in the industry with regards to the people that's supposed to support us. I think it creates the opportunity for us to voice our concern as private and public figures talk together and try to find the resolution or an avenue to find a common ground for the best solution for the most vulnerable and for the general public. I do also believe that people have given up having hope in, and as you mentioned in one of your previous questions with regards to finding a case number. So if you are affected by crime, I don't think anyone really still thinks that something's going to happen. So they don't report it. So it's definitely a sense of perhaps a false sense of acceptance that it has come down the amount of housebreakings or crime stats. I think it's people giving up hope in actually reporting these stats, mm-hmm. or reporting to build these stats. So we always encourage our clients to, if you see or hear something, you must say something. If you don't report crime, you can't get resourced through your police station, your local police station, if the stats are skewed towards another section or another neighborhood that's adjacent to yours, perhaps, that does report all these crimes. They might get a higher allocation of resources.
And a very interesting observation during the ad hoc committee there, Christopher. I'm not sure if you saw that. I mean, there was some sort of criticism around the flourishing of course, the private security industry, which, of course, you currently operate in. And they were saying that it is actually bleeding professionals from your army as well as police. But they actually understated the fact that we do need some of these parallel structures in order to assist the police, who are often in equipped or just caught off guard or are even corrupt themselves.
Yes, I think the community feels that if they make a direct payment or a contribution towards a private company, they feel that they have that support. So even if it isn't at any time needed, they feel that they have their backup for themselves and for their family to respond to a robbery at the house. If you're looking at a normal armed response solution, someone that can be there within 5 minutes to respond, even if it is just to take stock of if there is any emergency services required and perhaps put pressure on them and dispatch these emergency services. So I think from our side as a private security companies, we definitely try and support the police in areas where they cannot, where they're under-resourced, and to assist them to perform some sort of service towards the residents.
It's a much-needed collaboration there, Christopher. And is there any advice then to residents who could be potential sitting ducks as victims of such acts? How do you even respond to gun-wielding criminals within your house, Christopher?
I think it's similar to being in a situation of a hijacking where the tips always go in the region of, you know, just work with the guys. Don't try and aggravate or agitate them. Try and get them to calm down, and yourself. I mean, if you can remain calm, they can get what they want and they can get out. Because the main thing in any robbery we advise people and train people on is to stay calm and make sure that no one gets injured in the process. Mm-hmm. So that's the main thing. If you do find yourself in these situations, just try and get out of it alive and hand over what you can. Because let's be honest, no money or no goods in your house is worth your life.
Christopher, very enlightening discussion there. We appreciate your time. So that is Mr. Christopher Thornhill, who's the CEO at the Pangela Group, as well as a crime.
Meanwhile, President Ramaphosa has joined action on South Africa's hunger crisis.
Sinenhlanhla Mazibuko is a young mother who supports her family through collecting cans for recycling in the streets of Johannesburg. After losing her job several years ago, she turned to the streets to earn a living.
After losing my job, I soon realized that it's really hard to get another job. To avoid going back home and just sitting around doing nothing, I decided to collect cans and recycle so I can get a bit of money for survival. I even go to places where people drink alcohol to collect these cans. And also, I go through dustbins.
Her responsibilities extend beyond her 3 school-aged children. She also helps provide for her grandmother and aunt back home in KwaZulu-Natal province.
It's even worse that my aunt is not well, and I have to take care of that. I'm alone in all this. My children have to eat. They have to go to school. So I have no choice but to always make a plan.
Sinenhlanhla is one of millions of South Africans who are struggling to put food on their table as a result of the country's worsening food insecurity. According to some economic analysts, in a context of high unemployment and poverty and limited economic growth, many households across the country are finding it difficult to afford food.
Roughly 20% of the population has inadequate supplies of food or nutrition. And that number has been rising. If you look at the statistics from pre-COVID up until today, it's been on the rise. But the dilemma of South Africa is also the fact that we are this country that sends to export markets about half of what we produce. The challenge of hunger in South Africa is not so much that there's no food that is available or that the prices are rising much faster. We are struggling with what I would call the income poverty, where we have a certain number of households that just have no income at all. And of course, then that this causes this problem, because regardless of how affordable the products could be, if there is no income, there is no income.
Sitlobo says all sectors of society need to work together to deal with this issue.
The response to that has to be multi-sectorial and also takes a socio-economic approach, whereby there's one way of saying, how do we assist the household, just like the various government grants that we have available. But the second aspect is about how do we unlock growth in other sectors of the economy so that the South Africans that are fit and can work, they are able to find jobs.
South Africa is among 29 countries where the right of food and water is enshrined in the constitution, and where citizens have recourse to the legal system to ensure that this right is enforced. Yoli Sanjabalo for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Tanzania bans Twitter ahead of general elections on 29 October.
Boma la Tanzania la tega tambalanche zola exiba mene wango kutala masiku anai kute antu abonye vote yosanka msogole nindisho linga shokute antu asamaga wane maotenga boza pamene akwembekezela zaila kubonya vote. Ndipo President Samia Suluhu Hassan ndi akulu akulu aboma ndi okao oma kugulitsa ntchito tsambali. Ndipo noti ndika tsiliona zochitika mu Africa, Comrade Dr. Griffin Marwasa. Mwasola bwanji Comrade pamenepa. Mwasola bwanji, comrade?
Taswela kainu.
Taswela, kutseka kwa masamba, kwa tambalanche zola X ku Tanzania ndibo mala dzikolo, kubweletsa zota ni ku demokrasi ya dzikolo?
Kubweletsa mavuto akulu, ndipo mavuto alipo, komaso akala alipo. Muka kumbuka muna bwino, tikatengera ndale za ku Tanzania, ndizo siana kwa mbili, ndi ndale za mu Afrika mu. Choyambirira chipani cha CCM, chama cha mapinduzi, ndi chipani chimene china landira ufulu odzira mulira ngati dziko la Tanzania, komanso chakhala chingosintha ma president kufikira lero ndipo akulamulirabe. Ndiye ndi chipani cha mphamvu zimene apanga president a Tanzania tisangwaona iwowa, koma kumbuyo kwawo kuli ndani kodi. Chachikulu akufuna kuteteza ulamuliro wa chipani cha chama cha mapinduzi chikhalebe chikulamulira.
Zifukwa zomwe boma lapereka zotsekela tsambali ndizokwanira pomwe kwatsala masiku ochepa kuti anthu apite ku masankho mudzikolo, mungatifotokozere bwa?
Pa demokrasi ndizosakwanira, sizikumveka, koma pandale cholinga cha chikulu ndi kuteteza chipambano cha chipani cha CCAM. Monga menda nenea, chipani cha CCAM ndi chipani chimene kumbuyo kwake kuli ma president opuma a chipani chomwecho, amene amakhala apangiri a ndale za ku Tanzania. De ndale za ku Tanzania ndizovuta kwambiri. Mwachidziwikire chipani cha CCM chipezeka kuti chikupambana pogwiritsa ntchito njira zimenezo, koma pa demokrasi ndi kuti Africa akubwerera mbuyo.
Pakuoneka kuti President Samia Suluhu Hassan atsapikisana ndi zipani zazing'ono zokha malingana ndi kuti msogoleri wa chipani chachikulu chotsutsa cha Chadema ali mchitolokosi ndipo akukanizidwa kutuluka pa bhelo, nde kodi zipani zazing'ono zichite chiyani kuti zisagonjese?
Sports experts speak on the state of football in Africa.
All right, let's talk more about African football with our guest in studio, Bernard Otieno, who is a respected sports broadcaster and lecturer who is with me here in Nairobi. Bernard, thank you very much for joining us. As always, welcome to the studio. Let's start with the CAF Champions League.
It's still early days, but already we've seen the Kenyan champions already knocked out. Why does it seem that this keeps happening time and time again?
I think one of the problems that we have in Kenyan soccer is, especially if you have a new champion, there is the experience part of playing in the Champions League. And we had a new champion in Kenya Police who probably doesn't know how to navigate these circles right up to the money stage. It's very difficult because you need to have a professional league. And you need to have a professional league that has been running for a long time, a league that can actually be able to attract, players from different places that can give the experiences to raise your standard of the game for you to be able to play in those areas. So the team from Kenya, the Kenya Police, this is their debut championship win. And then they go into the Champions League. They find other people who have been there strongly and who are making challenges for everything else. They couldn't go further than where they did. Mm-hmm. So I think they lost to on aggregate to Al Hilal Omdurman. You know Al Hilal Omdurman is from Sudan. You know they're not even going to play in their own country because of what is going on there. So that tells you that they're serious about their soccer enough to be able to go somewhere else to continue playing league games. Mm. So it will take a team that has the experience, and the years of spending and investing in terms of good players professionally to be able to get to win or to even go into the money stages of the Champions League.
All right, let's talk about Morocco now. The Atlas Cubs are still celebrating their World Cup win, the second for the African continent. And recently, the nation also won the African Nations Championship.
Correct.
The CHAN here in Nairobi. Are we possibly seeing the first African world champions in the making?
I have absolutely no doubt that Morocco can do it. If you look at what they did at the World Cup in 2022 in Qatar, getting to the quarterfinals, and with players who have the mental capability to go that far, if you look at the fact that they have won the under 20, if you look at the fact that they have won the CHAN, and it's not the first time, they did it for the second time as well, they won it even as hosts, it tells you of a country that has passion for sports, a country that has invested even in the infrastructure for sports, has invested in the players themselves, and that is nurturing talent right from the youth development levels, which is what you need. You need a feeder program. They have the senior team that is already doing well in the World Cup. And then now they have the under 20. Remember, these are the graduates who are going to go into the national team. Mm-hmm. So there's absolutely, and then they have the African Nations Championships, which was for players who are home based, who are based in the country, which means they have talent both at home. They have talent playing in the leagues of the world and they have talent that can go, further than just the quarterfinals that they did. So there's no doubt about it. If there's anybody who's going to make a big mark on soccer on the African continent, it's got to be Morocco.
Right. Of course, the roaring success hasn't entirely gone down smoothly. There has been some discontent over the spending for the preparation or for the 2030 World Cup and other football developments. What's your take on this?
And yet again, you saw how they welcomed the under 20 team back home. Isn't that quite a paradox? That's what makes me think that this should just be a broader conversation on the impact of hosting big scale, international sporting events on the community.
Right.
The chiasmus that goes, sports builds communities and communities build sports. Mm. It's a little bit of an internal conversation that they should be having with themselves because they have invested already heavily in infrastructure. And I think this is to do with the hosting of the World Cup,
rights
that are usually given 8, 9, 10 years in advance. Mm. So there must be something else that the populace is feeling that they want done, but it's nothing to do with their love or their passion for soccer. So it's just that broader conversation of what should be done beyond just sports, because you saw it, even the CHAN in Kenya. I mean, just the investment on the infrastructure, just the, the hotels are full, the ground transport, the number of people getting employment, it always translates into something profitable for the country. So Morocco would have all the reasons to want it to go to their country.
All right. Speaking of going to their country, of course, the Africa Cup of Nations is now just around the corner. We were talking off air about how packed the calendar is, the football calendar. Can Morocco, as host nations, maybe then go on and win it?
I told you earlier on, and I'm still repeating it, and I've always been asked this question about Morocco. They have the mental capability to go beyond just what is expected of them. Then they have the professional leagues as well. Then they have the home-based players. Then they have the professionals who are playing in European clubs. Surely they have everything working for them to be able to host and to win. And that is usually a plus when you do both. You host it and win it. They've done it before with the African Nations Championship. So they can still do it again with the Africa Cup of Nations.
All right. Yes. We will be all ears and all eyes, especially also waiting to hear your voice in the commentary box, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
Thank you, as always, for joining us on the program. Bernard Otieno, respected sports broadcaster and lecturer, joining us on the program. Well,
China and the U.S. hold trade talks in Malaysia.
China's Vice Commerce Minister says China and the U.S. have had an in-depth and candid discussion. Li Chenggang, also China's international trade representative, spoke to the media after the second day of high-level trade talks with U.S. officials in Malaysia.
As everyone has noticed, over the past months or so, there have been certain fluctuations and disturbances in China-U.S. economic and trade relationship, which have drawn widespread international attention. I would like to emphasize that since the China-U.S. trade consultations held in Geneva this May, the Chinese side has strictly followed the consensus reached by the two heads of state in their multiple phone conversations. We have earnestly and sincerely implemented the arrangement agreed upon the consultations. China has carefully safeguarded the hard-earned and relatively stable China-U.S. economic and trade cooperation relationship. Therefore, the recent fluctuations and disturbance are not what China wishes to see. Yesterday and today, the economic and trade teams of China and the United States conducted in-depth and candid discussions and exchanges in Kuala Lumpur on issues of mutual concern in the economic and trade fields. The discussions covered a wide range of topics, including export control issues of concern to both sides, the further and longer extension of reciprocal tariff measures, issues related to fentanyl tariffs and counter-narcotics cooperation, the expansion of bilateral trade, and U.S. Sanction 301 related measures on vessel fees, among others. Both sides conducted constructive discussions on these matters. The U.S. side expressed its position in a firm manner, while the Chinese side remained steadfast in safeguarding its legitimate interests. After more than a full day of intensive discussions, the China-U.S. sides constructively explored some solutions to properly address mutual concerns on the aforementioned issues, reaching a preliminary consensus. Next, both sides will carry out their respective internal approval procedures. Through these rounds of China-U.S. consultations in Kuala Lumpur, both sides further recognize that a stable China-U.S. economic and trade relationship serves the interests of both countries and is also beneficial to the world. Looking ahead, the two sides will continue to strengthen communication, laying a solid foundation for sound, stable, and sustainable China-U.S. economic and trade relationship. I would like to add one thing. Is during the consultation, the two teams has always respect each other, and the talks actually carried out in an equal footing manner.
U.S. businesses warn of heavy blow if China trade dispute escalates.
The overarching hope among U.S. businesses is that an all-out trade war can be avoided, or at the very least, an escalation can be avoided. If not, and tariffs jump to 155% at the end of the month, like President Donald Trump is threatening, that would immediately halt nearly all trade between the world's two largest economies, hitting American industry very hard. China is critically important. It's not only this massive market for U.S. exports, but also a key part of global supply chains. And there are many industries in the United States, including the electronics industry, automobiles, apparel. They are dependent on components or raw materials that are made in China, things such as rare earth minerals, which are used in the production of high-tech products in military equipment like the F-35 fighter jet, or pharmaceutical products and ingredients. That includes antibiotics and ibuprofen. According to U.S. trade figures, U.S. goods and services trade with China hit nearly $660 billion last year, and all of this trickles down. According to the U.S.-China Business Council, American exports to China support more than 860,000 jobs. And these are jobs not just in manufacturing, but in retail, logistics, and farming. And farmers are already feeling the effects of these trade tensions. Beijing put these retaliatory tariffs on U.S. farm goods back in March. And China, which is usually the biggest buyer of U.S. soybeans, hasn't booked a single shipment for the fall harvest. The Center for Strategic and International Studies estimates that farmers will lose out on $5.7 billion worth of soybean exports to China through the end of this month. And if nothing changes during the peak harvesting months of October and November, they stand to lose much more. Businesses could also be hit if American consumers buy less. Imports from China have helped to keep prices lower in the United States for decades. There was actually this study by the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis last year that found that China is the cheapest source for 29% of products in the U.S. that are imported into the U.S. more than any other country by far. So if trade is disrupted, it could drive up prices and Americans would have to become pickier on how they spend their money. These are just some of the reasons why American businesses are very keen to see this trade spat end or at least stabilize soon. Tony Waterman, CGTN, Washington.
Meanwhile, Netanyahu says Israel will decide which foreign troops are acceptable.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday that the country would determine which foreign forces it would allow as part of a planned international force in Gaza. Netanyahu spoke at a cabinet meeting.
We control our own security, and we have made clear that in regard to international forces, Israel will determine which forces are unacceptable to us, and that is how we act and will continue to act. This is, of course, accepted by the United States as well, and its most senior representatives made clear in recent days. Israel is an independent state. We will defend ourselves by ourselves, and we will continue to control our fate.
It remains unclear whether Arab and other states will be ready to commit troops. That's in part given the refusal of Palestinian Hamas militants to disarm, while Israel has voiced concerns about the makeup of the force. The Trump administration has ruled out sending U.S. soldiers into the Gaza Strip, but says it has spoken to multiple countries about contributing to the force. Last week, Netanyahu hinted that he would be opposed to any role for Turkish security forces in Gaza. Once warm Turkish-Israeli relations soured drastically during the Gaza War. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke about the international force during his visit to Israel on Friday.
There's a lot of countries that are offered to do it. Obviously, as you put together this force, it'll have to be people that Israel's comfortable or countries that Israel's comfortable with as well. Let me just say that I think there are a lot of countries that are expressing interest right now.
Rubio added that Gaza's future governance still needed to be worked out among Israel and partner nations, but could not include Hamas. A major challenge to Trump's peace plan is that Hamas has not committed to disarming. Since the ceasefire began, Hamas has waged a violent crackdown on clans that have tested its grip on power. At the same time, the remains of 13 deceased hostages remain in Gaza, with Hamas citing obstacles locating them.
We know Hamas can return them.
However, an Israeli government spokesperson said on Sunday, Hamas knew where the bodies were. Israel, which continues to control all access to the territory, allowed the entry of an Egyptian tactical team to work.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi. From Indafa, happy usual, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Monday afternoon.